up on my mustache, in a brown swimming pool.
Hello everybody, Julian Charles here of themindrenewed.com, coming to you as usual from the depths of the Lancashire countryside here in the UK. And welcome once again to TMR's regular New Year's Eve show, which we've enjoyed sharing with listeners for 6 years now. It's amazing to think it is that long, but it is 6 years. Each year we are joined by members of the Nephilim Person Secret Society, which is composed of high-level initiates from affiliated shows such as Like Flint Radio in the Southern Hemisphere, Fringe Radio Network in the US, and Revelations Radio Network, also based in the US, and other talented and illuminated persons from around the globe. And each year also we explore a theme or two together, and indeed announce a Kickstarter campaign for a scientific cause. So this year, apart from sharing things from the news over the last year that tickled our fancies, we shall explore the possible connections between three main burning issues of 2020. Number one, the mysterious disappearing monoliths that have popped in and out of existence around the globe this year. Number two, Dr. Klaus Schwab's soon to dawn Great Reset. And number three, bee evolution, the amazing discovery of 2020, which is destined to rewrite the whole of natural history from the primordial bee to the rise of Homo sapiens after trillions of years of evolution, for which we are joined by our resident bee evolution expert, Dr. Frank Johnson. Yes, from the sir. US, also a researcher for Chris White's Ancient Aliens Debunked Project, Professor GK from Down Under, host of Light Flint Radio and all-round chook enthusiast, Dame Jennifer Tyson, our resident angelically voiced classical singer from Texas, Sir Mark Campbell from the UK, a.k.a. Ed Balsam Clamp, or Campbell Adams, or the interviewer of Madame Belle Caps. So again, a highly impressive elite cast. Dr. Johnson.
Yes.
Dr. Johnson, how are things in LA these days?
Oh, they're good, Julian. How about where you're at across the pond?
They're okay. They're very early at the moment. It's about 7:30 in the morning. Well, I suppose I shouldn't say that because we're supposed to be in the evening, aren't we? But let people interpret that in whichever way they like.
How's Mark over there, too? He looks a little bit disheveled.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I mean, Mark is kind of with us, but unfortunately, he's locked inside one of these metal monoliths and tied up and gagged. So if we hear anything like a mumble, then I'm afraid that's him. Mark, how are you doing? Are you coping?
Hi, Mark.
Yeah, well, we'll see if we can release him at some point during the show. Maybe if we get an answer to these three questions we have about the monolith and the reset and the bees, if we can get those things connected in some ways in our minds, then perhaps he'll be released. We shall see. Professor GK, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Julian. Thank you. I just take this opportunity to point out that this is the turning point of humankind. This is our opportunity to reset the world. Now, do not assume that we can go back to how we were. The old-fashioned normal is now fiction.
Thank you very much.
That's just a bit of a preview for what's to come, Julian. Yeah. No, thank you, Julian. Thanks for the invite to come on the show. Yes, well, it's I'm in a different time zone to all of you, but very much looking forward to the fun and frivolity and maybe some learning.
Absolutely.
And the cheers later on. I know you have a nice wine set aside for us for the finale, so looking forward to that.
Excellent. And where are you speaking from this year? Given what we know about this supposed place.
Yes.
Where are you actually?
Yes. No, I'll just let you know that I am in my bush hut studio, high on top of the Great Dividing Range in southern Queensland. Mm. And we're expecting some rain for a change, and that would be nice, but it's been very, very hot.
Wow.
And just to let you guys know on the top side of the world that if you don't mind, could you please send some snow? It would be greatly appreciated.
Well, we'll try.
I'll have my family send some from Minnesota.
Thank you.
I was just telling my children how sad it is for people in Australia who have to celebrate Christmas in the middle of summer.
It's a waste, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's amazing because, you know, all the decorations you see and all the Christmas cards, they're still decorated with snow, you know, and all those winter
things.
It's
so unfair.
Yeah, and we look at that and we go, oh, man, you know, that's not how it is here. We just have a, you know, an Aussie Christmas. It's hot, I tell you. Yeah. But a lot of people hit the beach for their Christmas and they'll take cold cuts and salads down to the beach and have it there. So that's one way to, I guess, compensate. But, no, we do miss out on that. And I'm very jealous of everybody up there on the in the Northern Hemisphere that you get to actually have a cold, if not white, Christmas.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, I heard you there. So how are you doing? You officially have COVID-19, don't you?
I sure do. My taste and smell went away. That was really fascinating, to be quite honest. I was like, yes, I can now drink all the good, healthy green smoothies that taste horrible and it won't make any difference because I can't taste them. I'm going to lose so much weight getting super healthy, drinking all this stuff that's not very nice to drink. Yeah. It's awesome. It's great. I mean, you know, it's great because I know that it's temporary, but actually my taste and smell has come back at about 50%. I have a pretty keen sense of taste and smell normally. Mm-hmm. I'm about 50% now, and that's kind of a bummer because now I'm starting to want to eat like food that's not so healthy anymore. So
you're one of the lucky, ones, aren't you? Because you've had a really very mild case of this, haven't you?
Yep.
Because when you mentioned, yeah, sorry, go on.
That's okay. I was going to say I got a little bit of achiness one night and tiny bit of coughing congestion a little bit like for one day. And after that, I felt pretty normal other than having a little bit of extra tiredness. Then my sense of smell went away right after I had my test, which came back positive. Yeah, I was like, I guess I really do have it then. That whole sense of smell and taste going away is pretty big giveaway that it's actually COVID and not something mild, like some allergies or something. So we get allergies a lot in Central Texas here. So you can never tell if it's COVID or allergies.
And did you take some of those supplements? Because you were on Facebook talking about that, weren't you? Various things that you bought. And did you whack them down?
Oh, man. I take double the dosage that's recommended because I do it in the morning when I wake up and right before I go to bed. And I take vitamin C and I take zinc to colonate because if you take zinc oxide, it doesn't help you. And then quercetin, which when I was getting my test at this pharmacy, I asked, because you could sit in the parking lot and just wait for them to come out and swab your nose with a Q-tip. And so I called in and I said, hey, do you guys have any quercetin?
Right.
And the gal who I was talking to literally tried to say quercetin six different times, and she literally pronounced it six different ways. She had no idea what I was talking about. And then I'm also taking vitamin D. So I feel like that's all been super good for me.
Excellent. Well, let me just say, because I always have to, so this is not medical advice. Please do consult your doctor before making any changes to your diet by way of supplementation, etc. But yeah, I hadn't heard of quercetin before all this broke out. And yeah, I've actually been experimenting a little bit with these things myself. I've had five sore throats over the last couple of months or so because we've got a four-year-old, of course, who goes to nursery some days in the week. And each time I've got this sore throat, well, I know from experience that invariably that leads to a cold. You know, so, oh no, here we go. I can, you know, it's coming on, it's coming on. But I've tried five times. This is not a recommendation for anybody else, mind you. Tried some quercetin with vitamin C and zinc picolinate, and each time it's gone within 24 hours. Absolutely remarkable. So maybe if those were other types of coronavirus, then maybe that bodes well, as it were. So interesting to see that you've been taking that sort of combination as well. And it's now, what is it for you now? It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I did say to you, Jennifer, look, you've got COVID. Don't come on. You know, you need to rest, but you are insistent. So
how can I miss the party, man? COVID can't keep me down. I'm not going to miss celebrating New Year because of this. This is 2020. I mean, you can't let COVID keep you from celebrating, finally getting into 2021.
No, absolutely. That's the fighting spirit. Excellent. Mark, are you there? Have you come out yet? Mark?
That sounds bad.
No, I'm afraid he... No. Yeah.
Are we allowed to poke him?
You can try, Frank. Have a go. No, I'm afraid we're just going to have to wait till we've sorted out those questions. Hang in there, Mark. Hang in. And Jeff Bankins, Lord Jeff Bankins, unfortunately he's not able to join us in person this evening, but he has left us a message, and hopefully we'll listen to that message a little later. So anyway, thank you all for coming on. So let's start with this really important bee evolution theory that Frank is our resident expert on, because I think the Kickstarter this year has to do with that theory, doesn't it, Frank?
Yes, it does. We've kind of put the expeditions to the jelly center of the donut Earth on hold, pending more funding for that Kickstarter and GoFundMe.
Right.
And also in some of the research I was doing within some of the earlier expeditions, I came across some interesting fossils, which appeared to be older bee fossils. They were in sediment that was much older than the first recorded bee as is widely known. And after some more research, I found out, I think it was your own ancestor, Darwin Charles, wasn't it? Who
That's right.
had first proposed a theory of primordial bees being the original life form and all life evolving from the bee. So,
yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, Frank. I mean, it was discovered last year, actually, in my loft. Because he is, in fact, my great-great-great-grandfather. Mm. And his lost work is on the origin of species and stuff, the ascent of all living things from the primordial bee.
Yeah.
Published in 1858. So it actually predates Darwin's major work by 1 year.
Yes, that's very... it's some very helpful of you to send me some of that research, too. It's really been some groundbreaking theories I've had, and I think with a little more funding, we can find some more fossils and shatter the halls of science
Absolutely.
As they now stand and bring the truth out.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the general structure of the theory? So the idea, well, it's more than an idea, isn't it? It's pretty much a certainty, but all life, and we're talking everything that's alive, the whole of natural history, did in fact evolve from a single primordial bee. Is that right?
That's absolutely right, yes. The theory, as I understand it, is it's much like the current theory of evolution. You know, the nothing interacted with nothing, became something, and then the Big Bang and all the chemicals. But as opposed to there being a first amino acid or a first single-celled organism, the primordial bee spontaneously generated from the random chemicals, and from there was a progenitor of everything else, trees, cottage pie, octopi,
incredible,
dinosaurs, you name it.
Excellent.
The primordial bee existed, and then over millions and trillions of years, the offspring of this primordial bee shot off into all the other life that we know and see today.
Wow, Frank.
Excellent. And it's amazing. You mentioned dinosaurs there.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm so glad.
I can mention dinosaurs again if you'd like.
Would you? Please.
Yes, also dinosaurs.
But Frank, did you hear about the mummified dinosaur that they unearthed? It took them like 9 years from the time they discovered it to the time they were actually like really be able to pull it out of the ground, and it literally has tissue, internal tissue,
I
skin.
Did hear that.
Yeah. There's so much material that's preserved that they're really calling it like a mummified dinosaur.
Wow.
And I
thought that was a really interesting one. I'm wondering if I can get a sample to fry it up and eat it, but
you know, people constantly talk about, you know, dinosaurs being around millions of years and that sort of thing, but I think, you know, with tissue that fresh, it's only a primordial bee that could explain that.
I would agree, because there's also been some other bones that have been broken open through accident or what have you, and they've actually found red blood cells and tissues inside the bone, too. So I think we're going to have to throw out the theory that dinosaurs existed millions of years ago and go with something more recent. I'm not sure when they would have died out, but I'm sure the primordial bee explains everything.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Well, Jennifer, does that... Sorry.
Frank, I was going to say, Frank, some of the research that you recently sent me, how the thylacine, you know, or AKA the Tasmanian tiger, it got its stripes from that primordial bee. So, I mean, if you go online and you see pictures of the Tasmanian tigers, and there are a few, you might see that that's obviously come from the primordial bee. Mm. And so because you were talking to me about that, I did some research recently, and there's been a recent discovery in northern Queensland. So we know that the last Tasmanian tigers that existed were obviously in Tasmania, but there's been a recent sighting in northern Queensland. So I think it's JCU, the university up there, is going to do set up some cameras in the bush. Now, this is in the deep north. I think it's in the Gulf of Carpentaria, because there is a, what they say is a genuine sighting of two adults and two pups. Now, if that's true, the thylacine is back, baby.
I hope that's true. Yeah. I hope so, keep me posted on that. That's actually really interesting.
It is, yeah. And I put that together because you were talking about how the stripes from the tigers, they got it from the bee. So, yeah, there you go. Your research is doing really well. Thanks for the stripes insight. Have been
carried over to many other animals like zebras, probably more dinosaurs.
Yes.
Yeah, I think a lot of dinosaurs were striped.
Yeah, I think there were too. I swear I've seen a couple in Jurassic Park that were.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty authoritative right there.
Right.
Yeah.
But is there a Nephilim and Nazi connection this time?
That's kind of controversial. There's some who think that there might be. There might be. I think the Nazis actually helped to cover up the bee theory because it didn't fit in with their theory of the Atlantis and the hollow earth theory and stuff, which was wrong anyways. When you tie in
anti-science, weren't they?
Yeah, the Nazi scientists, they covered up not only the donut earth, but also it looks like the primordial bee as well by promoting the Charles Darwin texts and stuff, the Darwin Charles texts. And it's really quite a great loss to the world. We've had all this fake information for so long.
Absolutely.
I have a theory, Frank. You know, you mentioned at the beginning there of your description about how nothing interacted with nothing and then there was something. And I thought, you know, that makes a lot of sense in this kind of philosophical sense of like, in order to exist, we have to be.
Right.
So I was thinking, you know, you go nothing, interact with nothing, and suddenly you just be. And so that points directly to the primordial bee.
Yes.
And I think, to be honest, that the work of Darwin Charles has not been as lost as we think, because it was in the late 60s, well, it was late 60s, early 70s, sorry, it's not quite my decade, that the very, very famous song Let It Be came out. And I think that there was messaging about the reality of life there, about the reality of the universe.
Yes, John Lennon, Paul McCartney knew. They just knew.
And you know, Jennifer, this all harks back to Hegel, Georg Hegel, because back in the 19th century he was talking about how being and non-being we're in a sort of dialectical relationship with each other, such as to produce becoming.
Right.
So it's, yes, absolutely. So Hegel knew about this deep theory as well.
Well, and that also speaks to the Nazis. You remember work is salvation and things like that. They're all about doing. They're not they're not at all about being.
Oh.
And I think that makes a lot of sense. I really like philosophy. So, you know, I just.
Yeah, no. Would you mind writing the introduction to my book that I'm going to be publishing? Because I think this is all critical stuff that people need to know.
Oh, that would be great.
Are you feeling all right there, Jennifer? Are you okay?
SARS-CoV-2.
Yes, hello, SARS-CoV-2. I feel so humble, actually, to have introduced you to on this professional basis. That's excellent.
By the way, I have really quickly, I wanted to go and knock on the monolith and see how Mark is doing.
Oh, dude. Whoa.
Wow, that was interesting sound. I was kind of wondering what that material is made of.
Mark, we can't hear what you're saying, but how about one moan for yes, two moans for no? So are you all right in there? Can you breathe? All right, good. Okay. Well, we'll try to release you. Tell me, Frank, you're actually raising money again, so I'm going to put a donation button back up on the website. I think people will be disappointed to know that you didn't actually use the funds from last year. Presumably, you say the expedition is on hold, so you will be using those funds if you can raise some more. But you're trying to raise yet more money for another project to do with B-evolution theory. What do you want the money for this time?
Well, I think, number one, I need the money to go on some fossil digging expeditions to get more fossils to bring to the scientists of the world so that they'll finally accept the theory.
Okay.
That's really number one. Number two, I was hoping to finance a time machine so that I could go back and prove it myself, but that one might be a little bit of a tall order.
Yes. That's a very good idea, though. It's surprising nobody's thought of that before, really.
It is. Yeah. It is. I'm going to see if Donald Trump will let me use his, but so far he hasn't responded to me.
No. Okay, well, yes, a reminder there for listeners then, please. If you're listening in real time now, then please do go over to the Mind Renewed website and you will find a donation button there. So please do give generously to either of Frank's works here.
And if I could update to the donut expedition donations, we've reached a whole $10 by now. So thank you for everyone for donating to that.
Well, that's remarkable because that's less than we raised last year, isn't it? What happened there? Did people withdraw? Did they? No, I know what it is, Frank. It's Donald Trump withdrew when you asked him about your time machine. Yeah, go on.
I was going to say.
Sorry, GK.
Yeah, I was going to say that, by the way, we actually have missed the boat. Ooh. Because the Australian research ship Aurora Australis, which operates out of Hobart and goes down to the Antarctic, has just left the other day on its final journey. After that, it's going to be sent off somewhere else. And so we've missed the boat, and there'll be a new ship that's going to be built. So we will probably have to find another way to get down there. And I was wondering, Frank, if you were in contact with, well, let's be honest, our alien brothers, if we could get a trip down there on the UFOs. Mm. Because Julian, as you know, you and I have discussed this a bit earlier on, our alien friends, President Trump actually, was on the verge of revealing that aliens do exist. But he was asked by the Galactic Federation of Aliens to keep it on the down low until people calm down a bit and to avoid mass hysteria. Can I tell you a bit about that, Julian?
Absolutely. Is this the one with this Israeli scientist?
Israeli defense chief, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Please, do tell us about it.
Yeah, so recently revealed in the Jewish press, it's Professor Chaim Eshed, right, who until 2010 spent almost 30 years as head of Israel's security space program. He's well qualified. He holds a bachelor's degree in electronics engineering, a master's degree in performance research, and a doctorate in aeronautical engineering.
Wow.
He was appointed head of the research and development department in the Israeli intelligence corps, so just keep that in mind. And he retired from there with the rank of lieutenant colonel. I'll just give you some quotes from him so we're not just talking about him, but we're hearing from him. He said they don't want to start mass hysteria. They want to first make us sane and understanding. So that's talking about the aliens. They want to make us sane, right? And until that day, aliens have secured an agreement to keep their moves under wraps, said Eshed, noting that the extraterrestrials come in peace. He said they've been waiting for humanity to evolve and reach a stage where we will generally understand what space and spaceships are. Now, this evolving thing, right, I'm wondering, is this going to be part of what we're talking about here today or part of the reset? Okay, but I'm just wondering, I'm just trying to tie that in there.
GK, can I just make a comment about, because I noticed that line as well, because this is actually a quote from him.
Yeah, it is.
They have been waiting for humanity to evolve and reach a stage where we will generally understand what space and spaceships are. I mean, I don't think I've ever met anybody who doesn't know what a spaceship is, so I don't know what they're waiting for, really, but there we go. And space, true. Yeah, okay.
Well, yeah, but see, I see it this way, and I'm going to go back to my philosophical leanings here. You know, if we're all from primordial bees and we clearly haven't evolved enough to know generally what space and spaceships are, and we can't handle it yet. It must be because we haven't really embraced the reality that we are so much more closely linked to bees. And I'm sure that real space and real spaceships have a lot more to do with bees.
Yeah, true.
And buzzing.
So maybe that's what they want us to understand.
Maybe that's what the aliens are waiting for, I think, is they want us to accept the truth of the bee theory before they'll reveal themselves to us.
That's right.
Mm. Frank, I think the truth of that is in the fact that bees are not mentioned in what he says.
Mm.
Well, it's actually tied into Mars.
Otherwise, that would give it away.
I think it's tied into Mars because he said that there's an underground base on Mars where these alien representatives are. But he said that also American astronauts have already been there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Obama was on Mars, actually. There was a secret base on Mars, and he was part of the teleportation program. There's a jump room here in Los Angeles. William Ramsey knows about it. Mm. And Andrew Bajago is a guy who was part of a CIA experiment who met Obama on Mars.
I want to say another quote that he made. He says, this is a shed still speaking. There's an agreement between the U.S. government and the aliens, claimed a shed. Quote, they signed a contract with us to do experiments here, meaning on Mars. And I guess, I think on Mars or on Earth as well. Anyway, they too are researching and trying to understand the whole fabric of the universe. And they want, and listen to this, this is key. They want us as helpers.
Like drones.
Ooh.
Like drones, exactly. Yes. And I think that's one of the reasons why why now in our technology we have drones all over the planet.
Right.
It's preparing us mentally and emotionally for us being their helpers.
So prepare to be plugged in and be zombies or drones. But, you know, if you're listening to this right now and you think this is sort of crazy, well, he has been called crazy. You know, during the interview, he said if he'd come forward earlier, he would have been hospitalized and people would have said that he'd lost his mind. But he says now he's got nothing to lose, I guess because he's retired, you know. And he said, you know, I've got nothing to lose. I've received my degrees and awards and I'm respected in universities abroad where the trend is also changing. So there's a change of foot. There's a great reset coming. Mm. So get ready to be plugged in and be a drone.
It is. It has to say, it is a curious story, isn't it?
It is, actually.
I don't know quite what to make of it.
It is.
Joking aside, it is very odd.
Yes. Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Why do you think Trump made the Space Force?
Yes, true.
Right. I look at this quote again about the whole fabric of the universe, and I think that's got to be, you know, hexagonal.
It is. Yes.
Like honey holders or something, right?
Correct.
Yes, space honey.
Yeah.
Do you know, if it wasn't for copyright, I'd like to put Gerry Anderson's UFO music in, but I can't, can I?
Yeah.
That would be excellent.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Yes, now we are a family again.
What's that?
What the?
What was that, Frank?
Sorry, I got a little experiment running in the background here.
Mark, are you still in there?
It's so sad, isn't it? Really sad.
Julian, how do you know he's actually gagged inside of there?
Well, I can hear him mumbling. He would speak if he wasn't gagged, you know, so it's the only rational explanation I can come up with. Unless, of course, his lips are glued together.
I just thought maybe the metal was thick.
Well, maybe. If we can get him out, maybe he'll tell us later. But, of course, in order to get him out...
Maybe it's filled with honey.
Well, maybe. But in order to get him out, we need these connections sorted out. We've got to find a connection between bee evolution theory and the Great Reset. And these monoliths.
Julian, you didn't put Mark in there, did you?
I did not, no. I thought he was coming on the show and he just ended up in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear that Adolf Hitler won the election in Namibia?
Yeah. I didn't hear that.
No, go on.
Yeah.
Go on,
so
tell
Adolf
us.
Adolf Hitler Uunona. I'm not really sure how to say his name. He said, this is quote, "As a child, I saw it as a totally normal name." Adolf Hitler Uunona said. He was given this name by his father. The Southwest African country Namibia has a new leader, and his name is Adolf Hitler. He did go out of his way to let everyone know he has no plans to take over the world.
He just wants some breathing room.
Yeah.
Jennifer, that's a genuine story, is it?
Yeah, so apparently Hitler is like his middle name, and Adolf is his first name, and his last name is Uunona. Yeah, he says, "As a child, I saw it as a totally normal name. It wasn't until I was growing up that I realized this man wanted to subjugate the whole world. I have nothing to do with any of these things. Ompunja is in Namibia's northern Oshana region and was formerly a German colony from 1884 to 1915. So a name like Adolf would not have been uncommon. But why his dad chose Adolf Hitler, who we know now, I don't really know. I don't think that's exactly, you know, just accidental that Adolf and Hitler both got put together in there. So, but apparently he grew up not having any idea who that guy was.
That's extraordinary.
So, there were some people here in the U.S. who actually tried to name their kid that too, but they were turned down by the state or the county or whoever. So apparently America is not quite as inclusive as Africa on that.
Namibia.
What was the idea that it would be child abuse, presumably? Yeah.
Well, if you look at some of the tenets of the Great Reset, according to Klaus Schwab. We actually need more inclusion, more integration, and we need to close the gap between emerging and established nations. So I would say that the United States needs to wake up a bit and let the little kiddies be called Adolf Hitler or whoever you want, you know?
Yeah. Because if they're doing Africa, whoever you want. Speaking of whoever you want, there's a couple who took coupon clipping to extremes, and apparently there was a Wi-Fi company that said, hey, if you'd like free Wi-Fi for 18 years, name your kid after our company. So they had a girl, they're a Swiss couple, and they named their newborn Twi-Fi. So the company's name is Twi-Fi. Like Wi-Fi, but with a T in front, Twi-Fi. Yeah. It's a Swiss internet provider. And so they named their kiddo Twi-Fi or Twifia or however you would say it. So anyway, they got 18 years of free Wi-Fi.
That's
isn't that awesome?
That's quite sad, though.
And that kid has a lifetime of mental illnesses.
Oh, well, she's Swiss, and they say they have all kinds of weird ways of pronouncing words. So who knows? It's probably okay there.
You wouldn't want to name your child Huru Huru, though.
Huru, mate.
Why wouldn't
you? Who are you talking about?
Huru. Well, you wouldn't, because this is one of the stories that I picked up on. This is from August the 8th. The BBC reported that a Canadian brewery apologizes for a beer that they named Huru Huru because it means pubic hair in Maori. So, see,
what language?
Maori. Hell's Basement Brewery in Alberta said it released its Huru Huru Pale Ale 2 years ago, thinking it meant feather. But Maori TV personality Te Hamua Nikura pointed out the common interpretation of the word in a Facebook video. The brewer's founder said the product would now be rebranded. We acknowledge that we did not consider the commonplace use of the term Huru Huru as a reference to pubic hair, and that consultation with a Maori representative would have been a better reference than online dictionaries. There we are.
Well, of course, here in Australia, huru means goodbye. And I didn't know that we'd be offending our Maori cousins by saying, huru, mate, you know?
Well, just don't say
goodbye.
You don't say it twice. Yeah. No, exactly. Right.
Don't say it twice. Goodbye.
Wow, yeah. Speaking about New Zealand, the name Lucifer is actually banned. You can't call your child Lucifer there.
Right.
But in South Australia, the state of South Australia, it's quite okay. You can call your kid Lucifer down there, but not in New Zealand. So there you go. Mm.
What about Satan? Could you call him? You have to be really strange to do that.
Someone here in Australia has called their kid Marvel. I wonder if that's got to do with all these the movies, the Marvel comics and Marvel movies.
Hmm.
So, isn't that wonderful, or isn't that baby a little marvel?
Yes. Oh, that's quite endearing, really.
Yeah.
All right, so how far have we got with our theory, the connection between the reset, the bees, and the monoliths? Do we have any connections yet?
I think we're all over the shop, Julian.
Oh, dear. I think Mark's going to be stuck in the monolith then for the rest of the show. Oh, sorry about that, Mark. That's terrible.
I'm going to throw out a little theory.
Hmm.
What are the three things, the monoliths, the Great Reset, and the bees?
Yes, these monoliths that have been popping up in Utah and California and is it Bulgaria and the Isle of Wight and all kinds of places. There have been several of them, haven't there?
I'm going to say that the monoliths are time travel things from the future.
Ooh.
Piloted by their future bees that have evolved to an intelligence akin to ours, and they're coming back in these monoliths to help ensure that my work is successful, to teach us all that the B theory is actually correct.
Uh-huh.
And to combat that, the New World Order, who obviously cannot have their apple cart upset by the acceptance of the B theory, is promoting the Great Reset to stop that from happening. That's what my working theory is.
That's very plausible, Frank.
Yes.
I'm with that one, yeah.
I based some of this on a video game I played once when I was younger, where this bee from the future piloted a meteorite back in time from the future to save the world, yeah.
Ah. Do you get a lot of your research ideas from computer games, Frank?
I do, yes. And a lot of them seem to involve time travel also. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's an excellent idea. I just wondered, you know, I thought that perhaps the Great Reset and the bees were sort of in cahoots, but no, they've got to save us from the Great Reset. Yeah, interesting.
Yes, they're trying to save us from the Great Reset.
Mm.
Who, the bees are?
Yes, they are.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I missed that.
The bees are the good guys because they're trying to, you know, obviously they, you know, we all came from the bees. They want us to accept that and to be able to go into the Galactic Federation. The New World Order knows that if we go into the Galactic Federation, their whole game is up because, you know, reasons. And this is why I need funding.
So you do need funding, yeah. Frank, definitely. I'm going to encourage listeners again, please do go over to the website and hit that button and make your donation this evening before the show.
Don't be shy.
Absolutely, don't be shy. No, this is a money bomb.
The donate button does not bite you.
Well, I'll put the dinosaur button back again for your expedition as well, Frank.
It may put you on a government watch list, but it will not bite you.
I think this is a very secure theory. So I think we're in every chance of getting Mark out of that monolith before the end of the show. So that'll
hang in there, Mark.
You hang in, yeah. Absolutely. One thing I wanted to check with you, Frank, is it right when we say all life evolved from this primordial bee? Are there any exceptions to that? Are there any creatures that don't fit on that evolutionary tree?
Not that I'm aware of, none that I've encountered in any of the writing.
Well, what about
the reptilian? Oh, go ahead, Julian, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say that. What about the reptilians? But also on page 48 of my great-great-great-grandfather's book, cows and pigs are not included.
Really?
Yes. They seem to have some separate evolution.
Cows and pigs?
Cows and pigs, specifically, yes.
Oh, my. What do you think he was getting at with omitting those?
I don't really know, but I'm glad he did because he gave me a segue into this story here.
Which is like the best segue ever. Go right ahead.
That's handy. That's so handy.
It is handy. In The Guardian on the 7th of August, there's a story called "You Swine, German Nudist Chases Wild Boar That Stole Laptop." And if you go there, you see a picture of him because there was somebody who managed to photograph the whole thing. You see the boar with the little piglets as well. And so here we have the wild boar, sightings of which have become increasingly common, had apparently spotted a pizza being eaten by other bathers. It seized a yellow bag containing the man's laptop, probably believing it to contain food, and was chased by the man into the undergrowth. And he got it back. And so this wild boar thought it was a pizza. And stole this nude man's laptop. Excellent story from 2020.
It's a great story. It reminds me of the Australian version of that, where in the Pilbara, that's over in Western Australia, a booze-stealing feral pig went mad in a camping area and stole 18 cans of beer. Apparently stole 3 six-packs of beer and ran away with them. It's a bit of an old one. It's a bit of an old story. It's a few years old, but it's apparently true.
Uh-huh.
And the government was warning campers to keep your beer under lock and key because of the feral pigs.
Mm-hmm.
They like a beer.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a shame when a nude swim is interrupted by wild pig.
Well done, Frank. Oh, dear. I mean, this is becoming very common, apparently. The Berlin's ombudsman, I can't say that word, for wild animals. There's an ombudsman for wild animals in Berlin, apparently. He told the local media there that such incidents had become increasingly common. Whether that's just pigs stealing things, or stealing pizzas in particular. I'm not sure, or laptops in particular. But yeah, they steal things, all right. If they like it, they steal it.
Maybe he meant that nude swims were becoming more common.
Such incidents, yes, maybe. Yeah, quite possibly.
As they rightly should.
Well, they should.
Well,
they should.
Obviously, that pig there would have liked to got together with our feral pig and had a beer and a pizza together.
Yeah. Indeed. Right, any more stories, folks, from this last year?
Yeah, I've got a couple that I thought were kind of strangely related. And it involves fences, gates, or walls, and people going over them in kind of unusual manners. Hmm. But this one I found was interesting. It was from November 25th. There was a North Korean former gymnast who fled to South Korea by jumping the fence. He claims he's a former gymnast. However, when he got to the other side, the guys were like, no way you jumped that wall, and they made him jump twice. So I'm wondering if they made him jump back to the north and then back over to the south again.
Well, just to prove the point.
To prove that he actually jumped over. Then right after that, I found French school warns parents not to throw the kids over the gate. So I used to homeschool my kiddos, and this year we put them in a school. And so for the first time, I'm one of those parents that drives their kids to school and sits in a mile long car line to drop the children off and pick them up again, which is wild and crazy to me. When I was in school, I just did the bus. But this was funny.
You put a picture of that in Messenger or something, didn't you? And
There was a long line. But parents of students attending the Trelade Primary School of Avignon, this is in France, have until 8:30 a.m. to drop their kids off before the gate closes. But some tardy parents just throw their they just throw their children over the 6-foot gate. So there haven't been
What's the other side? Tarmac.
There haven't been any injuries. Nevertheless, the school put notices outside the entrance that read, "I don't throw my children over the gate," you know, as a reminder.
That's absolutely amazing. Dear. This is not a recommendation, by the way, isn't it? Let's be quite clear about that. I'm very keen on disclaimers on this show. So, yes. Talk to your doctor first before throwing your child over a gate. Yeah.
I have to say, in being a parent in the drop-off line, there have been times when I've felt really anxious about getting there before school started. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to stop the car right here and we're all going to get out. We're just going to walk through the parking lot and take them there, you know?
Yeah,
you can get pretty desperate at times trying to get those kids in there at the right time.
Yes, I've had similar sort of things stuck on the road and thinking it's just literally a stone's throw to get my daughter to school. You've got to sit there for like 10 minutes just waiting for a traffic jam.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I have visions now of putting a child in a catapult and you wouldn't even need to drive, would you?
That would be a kidapult. That's a kidapult.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you speak there with great authority, GK. Is that something known in Australia?
Oh, no. I was thinking of trebuchet. I was thinking, we could build a trebuchet, but then kidapult, I thought that's a better fit.
I don't know, the trebuchet, we could get the whole class there in one go.
That's right.
Sure. That's how you send them on there. My brain just melted.
Well, let me just add in there that when I was teaching, the idea of a trebuchet to put the whole class in and eject them out of the school would be very attractive. But, certain classes, anyway. In particular, I can think of a particular one, but I won't go into them. Oh, well, that was an excellent story. Two stories there. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I've got one more.
Yeah, go ahead, GK. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. I don't know if you guys are aware, but platypuses and wombats, they actually glow under ultraviolet light, right? And they do.
Hey, is this a real story?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. What is that? Bill platypuses glow, did you say?
Yeah, they do. They glow under ultraviolet light. I'll send you the link to this. This is true, right? Okay, so Toledo Zoo in Ohio.
Weekly World News?
No, this is true. True story.
Weekly World News is the most truthful, isn't it, Frank?
Yeah.
Yes, they've revealed the Gutens and the Zeebans interfering in our election here in the U.S.
Bat Boy almost won.
Okay, and then the Israeli guy comes out and says the aliens are here.
Absolutely.
What more proof do you need?
This is genuine documentation from the Toledo Zoo in Ohio. And every time I think of Toledo, Ohio, I think of the John Denver song, "Saturday Night in Toledo, Ohio is like being nowhere at all." They roll back the sidewalks precisely at 10, and people who live there are not seen again.
Excellent.
All right, we'll move on from that. Apologies to everybody in Toledo. And no, but okay, let's get to the story. I've got to tell you about this. This zoo in Ohio, they posted their findings on their Facebook page. This is recent, right? And they believe that they were the first in the world to document the glowing phenomenon in Tasmanian devils, because they already knew that platypi and bilbies and wombats glowed, right? But in the case of the Tasmanian devil, the skin around their snout, eyes, and inner ear absorbs ultraviolet light and then remits it as blue visible light. This is amazing. Unclear whether this instance of biofluorescence serves any ecological purpose or is simply happenstance. But they glow in the dark. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, there's quite a few animals that do, actually, that are not Australian.
So it's not a prerequisite, no.
Yeah, no, it's not a prerequisite. Some scorpions do here in the States, in Arizona, I think. And then there are certain sharks. I went to the aquarium once, and they showed me that, yeah, you shine a ultraviolet light on these sharks, and they glow. They have patterns that glow on them.
This is extraordinary.
If you go online, you can see photos of these things lit up, you know, wombats and platypuses, and how they light up. I just thought that was an interesting story. Right. And it is for real, Julian. Yes, it's for real.
Has the story been fact-checked?
Okay, well, I will tell you this. Associate Professor, her name's Mena Jones from University of Tasmania, is looking into this. She said it's exciting news because it indicates that Tasmanian devils could have a broader sensory spectrum that we as humans weren't aware of previously. So we're still finding out things about this amazing planet and our fauna as we go along. It just fascinates me, these sort of things. But I'm wondering, Dr. Frank, if you could explain how this ties into the bee theory, because we've only just discovered this. This is all new.
It is very new, and I'm not quite sure how that would fit in. I would think maybe bees glow under ultraviolet light because scorpions do, and they, you know, that might be because of their exoskeleton, and bees have an exoskeleton. So maybe there's a connection there. It's further proof of bee evolution. I posted a link to the Nat Geo.
Yes.
That show is actually a glowing platypus, just so Julian can see it, that you're not making this up.
Well, there is a connection to Klaus Schwab, isn't there? Because he glows as well, if you shine ultraviolet light on him.
Put him under ultraviolet light.
Yes, yes.
Well, did you find that out, like, you know, at a party where there was, you know, one of those black lights or something? He was dancing?
I found it out at Davos because I was invited, you see, because I'm a member of the elite.
Listen.
And I went along, and I shone some ultraviolet light towards him, and he glowed.
Amazing.
Does Mark's monolith glow under ultraviolet light?
Ooh. Well, let's have a go. I don't know about you, but I can see that glowing.
Yes.
Can you see that?
I think I might see some stripes, actually.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Do you see those stripes over there?
Oh, I think it's cracking open.
Oh, my.
Yeah, Jennifer, those stripes are cracks.
Oh,
it's cracking open. He's coming out. Mark. Mark. Oh, wonderful. Yes, how are you doing? How are you feeling now you've come out?
Oh, well, gosh. Oh, dear. Wasn't much air in there. No, I'm fine. Oh, dear.
I was wondering why you were in there in the first place.
Well, my brother's nephew said that there was some, he'd seen some beaver skin chawns in there. So foolishly, I suppose, I went in to try and look for them, and the thing just sort of sealed itself. So quite scary, actually. Ooh. Still, I have got the chawns. They were in there, so I'm quite happy with the result. But it wasn't much fun in there, I tell you.
No, so the chawns, this is something to do with yarndling, isn't it? Just for listeners who...
They're special gloves that you use for yarndling. So, in fact, I needed some to fill in a gap in my collection, as it were. But I didn't think it would end up being quite so dangerous as that, but I'm very glad to be out of here.
I think something we need to know before I allow you to go and relax for a little bit. Were you aware of any bees in the monolith? Were you aware of any?
Well, I did. It's interesting you should say that, because there was a whiff of honey as I went in.
Yeah, I thought so.
Just a whiff. And then when the door closed or whatever it was, it sort of went. But yeah, honey.
That's quite incredible. But it's incredible that we've managed to, you know, to work out what these connections are. It's only because we worked out those connections between us that you were released from the monolith. So great. So anyway, it'd be nice
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you could just go and dust off now and relax just for a few minutes, maybe you'll join us again for the toast at the end.
Thank you. Thank you for releasing me. Yeah, brilliant.
You're welcome.
Hey, y'all, I just wanted to say one more little news story for me that I just felt like sums up, you know, the nostalgia of all that's happened in 2020. And that was March 17th, so right about the time when lockdown was first starting to happen in the United States. And we have this article, Oregon police remind the residents, don't call 911 if you run out of toilet paper.
Yes.
And, you know, that really warmed my heart when I saw that. It's been a while since we've, you know, talked about loss of toilet paper. And it just felt really good to remind myself of that.
Not to steal the thunder away from the toilet paper story.
But
I've just come across a groundbreaking article that does tie in the glowing in the dark platypus to bees.
Ooh.
This is groundbreaking. So this article is actually from 6 years ago, and this is a real article. There's a researcher at Germany's Heinrich Heine University, and they've announced that they were able to add a glowing gene to a fertilized honeybee egg so that the resulting larva had this gene so it would glow in the dark, and they fed it enough royal jelly to create a queen that then would produce drones that would have the glow-in-the-dark gene. Cool. And so then all of the drones produced by this queen would glow in the dark so they could harvest honey at night. So I'm thinking, since the bees do have the ability to glow in the dark, she maybe helped them recover that ability.
I think that's excellent. And I think that has established the connections. And I think it will also speak of the quality of your research, Frank, for all people who are donating in real time now. It'll encourage them to donate even more, just seeing the as I say, the quality of your research. Yes.
And if we top $100, I'm willing to get injected with a glow-in-the-dark gene also so that I can glow in the dark.
Yes. Yeah, and, as well. I'm sure there'll be plenty of opportunities to be injected in the future. Yes. Yeah. Indeed.
For $1,000, I'll be injected with honeybee DNA.
Well, they said that the honeybee genome was fully decoded in 2006, and I would expect that would be part of what we need to know in order to be, you know, ready for the bees on Mars.
Did you say to be?
Very timely, isn't it?
What was that, GK?
I think you said to be in that sentence.
Or not to be. That is the question.
I knew we were going to get there. I think we've answered the question. I'm glad we have, because we are fast approaching the midnight hour. My clock is, well, yes, it is. And you can't hear it, but it is ticking towards that. And we're very, very close. I think we need folks to get ready for our toast. Ooh, I can hear something.
Not a bomb, is it?
Oh, dear. I'm going to put a sound effect on there.
Oh, my goodness. Frank.
I think just before we just got time to hear from Jeff. Jeff unfortunately couldn't be with us, but he has sent a message into the show. So shall we listen to Jeff?
Yeah.
Yeah, and before we bring Jeff on, can I say one dinosaur one more time?
Yes, go on then, Frank.
Especially since his name is Jeff T-Rex Bankins.
Yes, excellent. Yeah.
Good.
All right.
Okay. Great story, bro. Needs more dinosaurs.
Yes, more dinosaurs.
Welcome, not from the depths of the Lancashire countryside. This is Jeff Bankins, also known as T-Rex, the performing strongman. Although my town has been through two hurricanes and a COVID pandemic and a crazy election, etc., 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 we have still been blessed enough to participate in this crazy New Year's Eve ritual. Don't tell Julian I said it's a ritual, because, you know, that could be letting out secrets. But regardless, I want to wish you all a happy New Year and pray God's blessings on all of you. And Julian, hit me up so I can have a little bubbly before we ring in the new year. Thanks.
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to bring our conversation this evening to a close because I can hear that that clock really is ticking dangerously close now to midnight. So let us get ready for our annual toast here as the clock strikes 12. And as long-time listeners will know, each year we see the old year out and the new year in with some very expensive and rare alcoholic beverage or other, sometimes a glass of champagne. But this year, just like 2 years ago, we are again treated to a bottle of choice red wine, Le Prieur de Van Zobre, vintage 2015, generously sent in by Paul, who is a long-time listener to TMR, and who lives in France. Thank you again, Paul. It's very, very kind of you. So, friends, and indeed fellow initiates, if you would raise your glasses, please. We're almost there. I shall pour the wine for the annual toast. Frank.
Yeah.
GK. No, don't drink it. Yes, sorry, don't drink it. Just put your glass out,
take,
man.
Take those Australians anywhere, won't you? Sorry, Julian.
Jennifer.
Chin chin.
SARS-CoV-2. Mark.
Cheers, and a very happy new year.
Okay, everybody. To the new year.
Cheers.
Happy New Year. Thank you for letting me out.
That's delicious. Thank you, Paul.
Best wishes for 2021. Thank you ever so much for coming on. I hope it's going to be a great year for you all.
Be seeing you.
Thanks, Emerson. Bye. It was awesome to see all you guys. Don't forget to wear your masks.
Yes.
Thanks for having us on, Julian. It was good fun as usual.
Great.
And we'll say Auf Wiedersehen, Zwanzig, Zwanzig, and hello, Ein und Zwanzig.
Huru, huru, GK.
Goodbye, goodbye.
Bye, goodbye.
Okay, I'll cut off then.
Cut, cut, cut.